Hi friends, happy Tuesday, and welcome to another episode of the Friends of France podcast. It's the third episode, so I made sure to bring you not just one, not two, but three expert guests who will talk to us about three intriguing alternative health practices, which has been our theme since the start of the season. For the past two episodes, we have delved into the world of traditional Chinese medicine, or TCM, from herbs in the first episode to acupuncture last week, and today, we'll extend our TCM discussion to one of our last topics in its domains, Qigong, practice considered one of the five pillars of TCM. It combines slow movements, breathing, and meditation to cultivate and balance the body's qi, or, as we have previously learned, the vital life force. I am beyond honored to be joined today by Lisa Lee, a certified Qigong teacher, and the founder of one of our brand partners this season, actually, the Flowering Tea Company, The Qi. Lisa and The Qi have been featured in New York Magazine, Bon Appetit, Architectural Digest, and so much more. What an icon. From ancient China, we then journey into the ancient southern portion of Asia, which is now called India, as we journey into the world of yoga. I feel like yoga, with its poses and breathing exercises, has been such a hot topic in the wellness practice, especially here in the United States over the past few years. In fact, I did it last year for the very first time. But not just regular yoga, hot yoga in the middle of summer. I am so sorry, but by far, this has been the worst experience of my life. Literally, never again. I was dying. I was sweating. I was sweating while I was dying. I was sweating on the way to dying. No, I'll just try regular air yoga next time. But kidding aside, we learn a lot about the history and benefits of yoga beyond the trend that we just know today. We are joined today by yoga and mindfulness teacher of a decade, Melissa Zheng from New York City. Trained through Yoga Maya and with Jules Mitchell, Melissa also pursued advanced training in biomechanics, meditation, trauma-informed yoga, and breathwork. And lastly, we delve into a not-so-ancient practice, but still falls within the domains of energy and healing, Reiki. Founded in the 1920s by Dr. Mikao Usui, Reiki is rooted in Japanese energy medicine and offers gentle, hands-on healing by channeling universal energy. Is this woo-woo? Is it witchcraft? Well, we'll find out today with our expert guest, Margaret Wang, an Usui Tibetan Reiki practitioner who trained at the International Center for Reiki Training. This is a very special discussion because I actually first heard about Reiki from Margaret herself during a panel a few years ago. Okay. We have a lot to talk and learn about in today's episode. But at the root of it all, we find out more about practices that seek to bring harmony, healing, and a renewed way of looking at the world around us, which is often filled with so many changes, stressors, and stimulations. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Let's go! Sometimes, it's not time that heals all wounds, but flowers, steeped gently into a cup of tea. Inspired by founder Lisa Lee's own healing journey from thyroid disease and burnout, The Qi is a wellness brand based in New York City on a mission to help people feel more joy, calm, and connection through the power and beauty of flowering teas. The Qi was born from the discovery of rare, single-origin whole flower teas rooted in centuries-old Eastern rituals. Each bloom is hand-picked at peak vitality by small family-owned farms across Asia, to offer a grounding, sensorial experience that reconnects you to yourself, one cup at a time. Choose from the Shangri-La Rose, Blue Lotus, and the Royal Chrysanthemum, and get 15% off at the-qi.com. That's the-qi.com, with the code FRANZ, that's FRANZ. One-time use, and cannot be combined with other codes. Drink flowers, feel alive. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Friends of France podcast. Today I am so excited to introduce one of our special guests today. I've heard so many great things about her. I even went to their special spot in New York City a few months ago during my friend's birthday. And they're actually one of the brand partners of our season this year. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. I'm so excited. And I'm so glad you got to enjoy the tea tasting when your friend had her birthday here and we got connected. good. Yeah, I'm really excited to chat more.
Yeah, so Lisa is the founder of The Qi, and she's also trained and certified in Qigong, which we'll learn more about today. Lisa, what is your story?
Yes, long story short, I was born and raised in the northeast of Beijing, so in China, and I was there until I was 14. I moved to the US, worked in fashion for over 10 years, super burned out, and then I was diagnosed with a thyroid disease in my late 20s. And of course, I went to the hospital because I was just like, what is going on? I would lose 5, 6, 7 pounds, you know, get it all back within a week. So it was like this kind of crazy fluctuating journey I had. But basically, they found out through blood works is that I had a thyroid disease. And the only solution the hospital had for me was remove my thyroid, put me on hormone pill for the rest of my life. And I felt really lucky because I grew up in China knowing there are alternative solutions. So I went to seek out a herbal medicine doctor who's also a acupuncturist. So after a few sessions, I went back to the hospital. The doctor did more blood work on me. He called me, I have no idea what you did, but your blood work came back totally normal. You are fine now. So that was very much a wake-up moment for me. And I have known this, you know, these sort of alternative holistic healing modalities for a long time. But that was like the very first time made a huge difference in my own life. And then I realized my best friend and her mom and many people, now that when I share the story, everyone's like, oh my goodness, you know, I'm on hormone pills, you know? So that was the beginning of me wanting to do something that was really beautiful, really nourishing, and really healing. That was the beginning of the Qi. And because I can't really drink caffeine because I just get a lot of jitters and anxiety, so I started the Qi specializing herbal, you know, especially flowering teas that are caffeine-free.
The reason why I love your story is because it really encapsulates the theme of our podcast season this year. You know, I think as a nurse working in Western medicine, I would say, and I think the podcast kind of shows this translation of, I was so focused on like the nitty-gritty of Western science. And then as I explored more, I realized that, oh my gosh, the United States is so ethnocentric when it comes to their treatments, right? And we fail to realize that there's a whole world outside of this country.
I have so many questions for you too, but why don't you get into it? Because I think it's so fascinating to think about, you know, if we think of Eastern medicine or Western medicine, like the yin yang of the circle or the two sides of the same coins. Yeah. I find it so fascinating, the different school of thoughts.
So seeing this whole world outside of the country and seeing this different treatment modalities, as you said, using our own body's healing properties and the nature around us that's been here for thousands and thousands of years. And speaking again into our body either healing our own or having the capacity to give us the peace that we need that maybe a tablet or a pill or a liquid cannot give, right? And then I think one of that comes to, I guess, movement and breath work. And within, I guess, traditional Chinese medicine, there is this one beautiful thing that I don't really know much about. Qigong, what is it? What does it mean? What is the history behind this? And I guess, how did you discover it?
Yeah, absolutely. I love this question because I think Qigong, it's kind of like the at the beginning phase of being aware for a lot of people here in the US. So to answer your question, my own journey around when I was starting the Qi, I also picked up Qigong practice. And because I was born in China, so Qigong or Tai Chi or martial arts, it's something I'm very familiar with, but I've never really delved deeper in terms of, oh, let me go find a teacher and learn it, you know, on a regular basis. But because I was on my own healing journey, I really wanted to find all the different ways that I thought could be beneficial for myself to kind of heal and just be happy and healthy in that naturally. So to answer your question, and this comes up a lot. So there's Qigong and then there's Tai Chi. So the difference is that Qigong, it's a much older philosophy, if you will. It's been around for about 2000 years. Tai Chi is short for Tai Chi Quan, which means ultimate fist. Tai means ultimate, Ji, it's like level, ultimate level fist, which is part of martial arts, essentially. So if you look at Qigong, which is like foundational meditation, breath work, mind, body, and spirit, and it opens up your meridians and channels. So it kind of goes into acupuncture. because the intention is the same, right? Which in Chinese medicine, the intention is very much similar in a sense that it's about balancing our body. What that means is your blood flowing freely? Do you have stagnation? You know, is your qi flowing freely? Qi means life energy or life force. And the name itself, qi gong. Gong means cultivation. So it literally, it's about cultivating your qi, cultivating energy. And qi also means air in Mandarin or Chinese. So if you can think of like, it encompasses everything there is in any living entity. Like we all need air, you know, we all need energy to survive. So even though the two words qi gong, cultivating qi, is such a small phrase, but it's really big. It's like huge. Yeah. It's like the entire universe can be instilled in the word qi or yin yang, if you want to go that route, which is like, you know, the different night and day, the different sort of opposite forces, but that's interchangeable and intertransforming.
Yeah, thank you so much for the explanation and also spelling the differences between qigong and tai chi. But you know, when it comes to, I guess, mind body practice and I get like breath work and being in tune with yourself, I think a lot of people would think first of yoga or meditation.
Absolutely.
That we know it. How does qigong compare to that?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I think it's similar in a sense that it helps you in the same way, which is about, you know, slowing down, having inner peace, de-stress, and having a peace of mind. But that also means your body is in a state of not fight or flight. It's relaxing. So when we're in a very calm state of mind, a lot of different things can happen. And that's how healing happened also, right? Like it's about like sending messages, calming, loving, kindness to improve our organ, improve everything. So in that sense, I think it's very much similar. You know, it's basically the same path, but once you get to the mountaintop, it's the same destination, but they're just like two different school of thought. It's really similar, but you know, because Chinese medicine, think of it as, so when you practice qigong, what you're really doing is like connecting yourself mind, body, physically, mentally, and emotionally. And it opens up like your channels, your meridians. It's what acupuncturists do when they put needles in you. But when you practice qigong, it kind of helps you that from you're just doing the movement that opens up your channel.
Yeah, I love that. You know, actually, one of our guests this season is an acupuncturist, a doctor of acupuncture. And she kind of talks acupuncture and our channels as kind of like the New York City subway system where it's so congested.
Yeah.
And it's just helping like clear out just even a little bit of percentage, gives that sense of release, gives that sense of peace. And I can tell from what you're saying that qigong also helps with that. But I'm curious, beyond just, I guess, more of the mental and the emotional context of like stress and peace, what are the other health benefits of qigong?
Absolutely. So that's another thing about Chinese medicine. So I think in Western medicine, it's separated, right? You go see a therapist if you have mental health issues. You go see a specialist in the heart, you know, surgeon if you have heart issues. But in Chinese medicine, they actually practice everything because everything is connected. So each organ, so for example, when we're talking about emotions, right? Joy is actually connected to our heart organ. Each organ is connected to a different emotion. So even though when we think about practicing qigong is a very much like mental, emotional, or spiritual practice, because it's connected to the different organs, that tied emotion also improves that organ as well. So that's how it all kind of ties it together. And if you want to go bigger, so in Chinese medicine, we are connected to nature and season. So each season is also connected to an emotion or a organ. So for example, again, summertime is joy. So the season, summer, it's tied to the emotion joy, and it's tied to the organ heart. I mean, there are other things too, but that's how everything ties it together. And it looks at everything, not only within our body, but also outside of ours.
I love that. You know, it's really peaceful hearing that not just physically there's a whole world outside of our bodies, but I feel like the world is in our court, right? In the sense that it's here to help us as well. Like we mentioned, like through nature and even like the qi, the flowering teas, right? And just really contributing to the whole human experience of well-being. I'm curious, so do you see qigong more as a health exercise, a spiritual practice, a combination of both?
Yeah, absolutely. I love this question, Chris. So there are different levels. I think same as yoga, probably. And you might know this if you practice yoga. I'm not a yoga expert by any means, but I think with Qigong, I would call it three levels. So if you practice and if you just keep it up, that will improve sort of your physical well-being. It might help you like improve some whatever you got going on physically. So like that's number one. And then if you go deeper, you practice a lot, it would improve your mental health, you know, your emotional health. And then if you go really deep and you practice and you kind of just go deeper and be more committed to the practice, you can get to spirituality. So like I would say the lowest level is physical health, middle is mental, emotional, and then the most high level, number three, would be spiritual. But they're connected. So it's not that if you only do it, you only get physical. It can sort of translate or they talk to each other as well.
Yeah, I love that. And so I'm curious, is there a Qigong form or movement that's your favorite and why? I mean, it's kind of sad because it's an audio podcast, so our viewers can't see, but what would be your favorite form or movement and why?
Yeah, I started actually sharing some of my favorite Qigong movements on TikTok. And for anybody who wants to kind of practice, there's this one, we call it hold the ball or hold the watermelon, giant watermelon. So it's basically you kind of relax your knee and your feet are shoulder length apart and you have your arms out in front of you. And then you imagine like you're holding a giant ball in front of you, in front of your core. And you just stand there and cultivate your qi or cultivate your energy. For someone who's starting, sometimes even 5 minutes is very difficult. You're just standing there and you're trying to cultivate inner peace without music, without anything else distracting you. It can be very challenging. And for people who's been practicing for longer, you know, we like to practice at least for 30 minutes and you really feel it. And it's such a clearing, like mentally, physically, sort of, it might feel it's stagnant because you're just like, in that one pose, but it's actually really active. If you ever try it, you'll know what I mean. Like you're like, whoa.
Yeah, well, I guess I have to try it later on
tonight. Try it, yeah.
And I'll update you with how I feel.
Yes,
watch me.
Email me.
I will. You've been training this for so many years, and I'm sure you know all the movements and the forms and so in tune and connected with yourself and the movements. For someone who's never tried Qigong before, what would you say is the best or the easiest way to start?
That's such a great question. And I don't know if I have a good answer for you. I think it's really important finding a really good teacher. Like who you're learning from, it's very important. And I don't think every teacher out there is a really amazing teacher. Like it took me 2 years to find my Qigong teacher because it's kind of a spiritual practice. And if you're learning it from someone who kind of don't really fully understand what they're doing, I don't want to say you can get messed up from it, but it's kind of not beneficial for you to learn. But there are two things, like if you do that, you know, sort of like hold the ball, it's really important, like after every Qigong movement, you kind of close it out. So like that's a way for you to complete your session and to kind of clean up your energy. So like if you're opening up your channel, opening up your meridian, open up your like spirituality, you know, all these things, you want to like close it. And there are a couple of things we do to close that. So like things like that. So if unless someone who's like really into it, they just won't know like all these, I don't want to call them nitty gritty things, but they're really important details.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think it's also, I guess with all the stillness, being intentional, I guess, in finding the time to actually do the practice, right? Especially in New York, you know, it's such a fast-paced city. No one rests and no one sleeps ever. But I guess what would be your advice to someone who's trying to get into this world?
Yeah, if you want to practice, you know, like hold the ball, the pose I was sharing earlier, that is a foundational Qigong movement. I had to learn that one, I think probably like over 3 months. I learned nothing else. Just like do that one thing to kind of increase your energy, cultivate your qi. So that's something you can start. And like you said, I totally get it. You know, like New York City never sleeps, but it's more important for New Yorkers to sleep than anybody else because it's such a busy city. So even finding, I don't know if everyone has 30 minutes to practice, but I think everybody has 5 minutes. Oh, if you're not on your phone or something else, everyone has 5 minutes. And even 5 minutes a day, kind of just start building that atomic habit, give yourself 5 minutes. You're not doing this for anybody else, not doing it for you, for Chris, not me. Like, I don't benefit from you practicing, but do it for yourself. Do it for your future self. You know, your future self will thank you for giving yourself this moment of kind of just inner peace and calm.
I wish for our audience who listens to this, who might be, you know, in a stressful moment of their lives or having health issues or not having that state of well-being, I hope they can also find the same thing that you found in Qigong, right? What has Qigong taught you about, I guess, life in general that you wish everyone could also experience?
Wow, this is such a big question. And I used to get yelled at by my teacher all the time because I didn't practice enough. And I think when I did practice really consistently, I was really happy. It's such a weird thing. If someone just randomly told me when I did practice, I was just happy. I'd be like, are you on drugs or something? It's odd and wild in a sense. When I practiced, I just felt grateful and I just felt happy. But nothing really changed in my life, meaning it, like, I didn't win the lottery, like, you know, like nothing dramatic happened in my life. It's the same thing, right? But it changed my mental state, like my perspective about life. I was just joyful and grateful for everything I had. I was just happy all the time, which is really odd. So that's one thing that happened to me. And then the other invisible things, I think a lot of it is actually it helps prevent illnesses. But you don't know that because it's like invisible, right? You're like, oh, I'm just good. I'm healthy. I'm happy. But when I don't practice, I get sick a lot more. Like either it's cold, either it's flu, like whatever it is. But then if I look back, I was like, wait a minute. When I did practice Qigong very consistently, I just didn't have any of this other stuff. But when I didn't, like other stuff came up and then I was more prone to other things where I'm sick, cold.
Yeah.
Through all my back, you name it, you know, like these like other things. Yeah. You're just like stronger somehow when you practice.
I believe it. And I think it's also rooting from that sense of peace, right? I feel like the more stress we have in our body, it definitely spreads through well and it influences how we feel, makes us more vulnerable to the world around us and to the sicknesses around us.
Stress. So many of us deal with that on a daily basis. I think the biggest thing when it comes to Chinese medicine or Qigong in particular or tea is it helps you de-stress. And I think, correct me, you know, let me know if I'm wrong. I think the stats are something along the lines of over 90% illnesses come from stress. Like you were saying, stress really manifests in all kinds of different diseases for us, either we realize that or not. So one of the most important thing for us is like, how do we de-stress, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that we have modalities and that we're learning more outside of our sphere here in the United States, more of like traditional modalities that has served so many people for thousands and thousands of years, like teas and breath work and movement, and one of them is Qigong. And Lisa, you've taught us so much today, and thank you so much for telling us all about your journey. That's so inspiring to me.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for doing this podcast.
Tired of health fads and fleeting trends? Reprise Health takes wellness back to its roots, back to all natural remedies that have truly stood the test of time. Reprise is a holistic wellness brand bringing the ancient wisdom of traditional Eastern medicine into the modern world. Their daily gummies feature ancient Asian superfoods like ginseng, turmeric, and reishi mushrooms that are proudly sourced from KPC herbs, trusted by acupuncturists and herbalists for over 100 years. Whether to help you rest, focus, de-stress, or sleep, bring centuries of wisdom into your everyday health for 15% off at reprisehealth.com. That's reprisehealth.com with the code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. One-time use and cannot be combined with other codes. Ancient wisdom, modern remedy. How do you know when something actually tastes good to an Asian person? When they say, it's not too sweet. And that's precisely what Wild Mannered set out to do. Founded by two childhood best friends who were tired of drinks that were too sweet, too artificial, and left them with worse hangovers. Wild Mannered is an Asian American founded brand focused on bridging people together with all natural, shareable soju cocktails. With flavors like strawberry basil, cucumber lime mint, and pineapple ginger, every sip is made with real fruits and botanicals and perfectly balanced at a lighter 13% ABV. refreshing, smooth, and never too sweet. Get 10% off your first order with code FRANZ, that's FRANZ, at drinkwildmannered.com. Or hit the store locator to find them in stores across New York City. Make your next get-together a little more wild-mannered.
Hi, everyone. And now we're back with one of a good friend of mine and also has a very special connection to one of our special guests from the first season of our podcast. Such a full circle moment. You know, I did hot yoga last year and I'm so sorry. It's probably one of the top worst experiences of my life. I think it's of the heat itself. I am so sensitive to the heat. And I remember just sweating the whole time and I couldn't appreciate the poses because I've never did yoga before. I went straight to hot yoga. So I think that was on me. But we have someone very special with us today. Melissa, Mel, thank you so much for coming on to talk about yoga beyond the hot yoga in itself. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really such a joy. I was so tickled that you invited me.
Of course. I mean, I know you were inviting me last year to these yoga sessions that I've never went to, which I have to now. And it will probably make up for the hot yoga episode that's so ingrained in my traumatized mind and body. But I want to talk about yoga in itself, in its simplicity, which is the more I hear about it and the more I read about it, I'm like, whoa, this is such a beautiful, not just practice, but a way of living in a lifestyle, right? But first, before all of that, I wanted to ask your story. How did you first discover yoga?
Yeah, thank you so much. So I'm Mel. I'm a yoga meditation teacher. I'm an Ayurvedic health counselor. I've been teaching yoga for about 9, almost 10 years now in New York City mostly. So I've been teaching at studios. I teach private one-on-one lessons at corporations, at events, organizations, et cetera, et cetera. I first found yoga in the early 20s. It's really funny how a single decision or like a single deal maybe shapes you and really changes the course of your life. But I found yoga at the time I was living in Houston, Texas, and a local yoga studio was selling a 30-pack of classes for $30.
Whoa.
Now this was in Houston, Texas, in the early 2010s. So, you know, that was more normal then, but it was really crazy. And it's like, okay, why wouldn't I do this thing? And I had like a whole year to use them too. It's not like, oh, I needed to use them in a week or something. Mm-hmm. I had so much time to use them. And really that was where it started. I just said, okay, I heard this is a good thing to do. I bought this pack and then I started going. And I would say that I've started to find some interest in it. I started to take more classes. I moved to New York. And New York is really, I mean, personally, I think it's just the heart of Western yoga. Like there is so much good quality yoga in New York City. But moved to New York and I was kind of on and off with yoga, quite frankly, for the first few years. And then I was inspired actually by Calvin, my husband, to do it. You know, he's very much he does so many things in his life, has so many different hobbies. And so it really inspired me. I was like, why can't I do more yoga? Why can't I make this more of a big thing for me? And so I did my first 200-hour yoga teacher training in 2016. I did that. And I really had no intention of teaching. I thought, let me do this. Let me learn a little bit more about what yoga is and deepen my own practice. And that happened. And quite frankly, after I graduated, because it's pretty intense, I was in a weekend program. I was working Monday through Friday at a corporate job. And so for 3 or 4 months, that was my whole life. Quite frankly, right after I graduated from my 200-hour, I didn't even do yoga for like 6 months. I was like, too much yoga. I'm yoga'd out. Don't want to do yoga. So I didn't even do yoga for like 6 months. And then something happened after that where I was like, you know what? I really had no intention of teaching, but something was sparked within me and I decided to start looking for opportunities to teach. So, you know, the rest is history. I started to teach from there. Like I mentioned, I've taught at a half a dozen studios in New York and have taught privates and at organizations. And, you know, it really has changed my life so much. Like yoga is arguably the most important thing that I do in my life. Mm-hmm. All of my free time goes towards practicing yoga, learning about other modalities that are related to yoga. And it's just something that I care so passionately about. And I care so much about bringing this to other people as well. It has changed my life in so many ways. And I know it has the capability to have a huge impact on others as well.
Yeah, I love that so much. And I agree. I've seen so many friends who started from just attending yoga classes, probably not hot yoga is their first session, and then are now instructors as well. And the ability for it to change someone's life is just so amazing. And we'll talk more about it today. And also we'll say hi to your husband, Dr. Calvin Sun, who was in our season one, episodes 4 and 18. Well, I wanted to talk again about the simplicities of yoga. I guess in general, what is yoga? Like, what is the history? What is the philosophy behind this practice?
So yoga, it's an ancient practice that originated in what is now India. So it wasn't even called India at the time, 6,000 years ago. It was ultimately a practice for freedom from suffering in the world so that we can connect to this inner wisdom, this kind of inner consciousness that we have within each of us. So when I say suffering, it could be literally any kind of pain that we experience, any sadness, the extreme ups and downs of life. Those ancient yogis recognize that as pain, right? How we get kind of jerked about by our emotions at all time, and how there is a practice that we can do to free ourselves from all of this. Quite a tall order, which is why it's a continual practice. Sometimes people call it a lifetime's practice, because if you believe in multiple lifetimes, it's something that you practice for multiple lifetimes to free yourself from this. So something that I personally love about it, that there's always something more to learn about yourself through this practice. So if I go through just like a quick history of yoga and how it came to the West, it was first written about and kind of systematized by a person named Patanjali. It's believed to have existed much longer than him, but he was the first, again, to systematize it. And his works were pretty complete when they were found. It's written as very much a full lifestyle philosophy. So all the way from the ethics of how to live, how to move, how to breathe, how to meditate, and then ultimately the steps to enlightenment or freedom. Yeah. So that was really where it was first documented. And it's obviously evolved and changed over the time since then. It really came to the West through a gentleman, a master, Swami Vivekananda. He was brought by Americans to be exhibited kind of like a show at the World Parliament of Religions in Chicago, like in the late 1800s. And so that was the Western world's first look at yoga. He got a standing ovation at this show. And people started to get really interested in it. And then there were, you know, a lot of other folks who learned, who went to India, learned and brought it back. There was a woman named Indra Devi, who is considered one of the first Westerners to study with a gentleman named Sri Krishnamacharya and bring yoga to the West. He, again, was one of the first to systematize yoga asana, or the poses, the practice that we kind of know in the West themselves, in a way that would be interesting to Westerners. So he's kind of considered like the grandfather of American yoga. So that's kind of how I got here. And it's evolved so much. Mm-hmm. But everything that we know really is coming from those few folks who introduced yoga back many, many decades ago.
Yeah. And I guess regarding the poses, I guess that's what most people think, right? When they think of yoga, like, it's just stretching. But for you, what do you think it really is? Is it just stretching? Is it an exercise? Is it a spiritual practice? Is it a lifestyle? I guess for you, how do you explain what it really is?
Yeah. You know, I think ultimately yoga is a spiritual practice, but however someone comes to yoga is perfect. You know, if they come to it and they think it's just stretching, great. You know, if they come to it, think it's just meditation, great. Like, however you find yoga, that's how you find yoga. And from there, you can learn more about yoga and what it is to you. So I mentioned this ancient book. They're called the Yoga Sutras by Patanjali. He was the one who wrote out all the kind of the original steps, first systematized it. One of those steps is asana, or like the poses, the practices that we know about. One of 8 steps. And so the asana to me, the West has taken asana and that's become what yoga is and most people's introduction to yoga, which again, I think is great. If that's how you find yoga, amazing, start there. And to me, the asana practice is really about increasing your body awareness. So what's going on in your body, how you exist in the world, the space that you take up in the world. And I think when you can understand that, and you have this deep realization for the practice, then you start to have this better intuition of what your body needs. Mm. And once you have more, a better sense of what your body needs, your body can sense when things are off, for example. And then you start to have this deeper level of awareness that the ancient yogis talked about. Mm-hmm. And so if you imagine, so for example, some people have very little body awareness. And even those people learning just the most simple body awareness, just maybe how to move their body a little differently than the way they currently do, it's revolutionary for them. Because literally what's happening is that you're building these new neural pathways, right? Mm-hmm. Your brain is building these new neural pathways for how to move. So imagine that, like if you take someone who has very little body awareness and just for them to learn just a little bit more can be so powerful. And then you take that and you just take that to the extreme, the way that we can really have this incredible wisdom and knowledge of our body and the way that we move, we can use that to prevent injury, to detect when things feel off, maybe our hormones are feeling off, we can better regulate our mind. So that's all just from body awareness. Like if you can even imagine that happening, think about taking that to the extreme and how these ancient yogis really learned so much just through this practice.
Yeah. So I guess it's a mixture of many things, right? It's multifactorial. It's not just body awareness. So it's not just a spiritual practice. It's not just a lifestyle. But I'm getting the sense of, I guess, the byproduct of changes in the human body as well. I guess, would you say there are health benefits to yoga other than just body awareness in itself?
Yeah. I mean, I'll bring this back to Western medicine, which I'm guessing a lot of your podcast listeners are familiar with. We know about this mind-body connection. Right? Like we have heard about that. We have heard about how our emotions, our mind, they will release hormones that will literally change our bodies. We know that our mood changes how our gut digests. We understand vice versa, how food and exercise and movement of the body, so the physical stuff, affects our mood and our mind. You know, of course there's an impact. Mm-hmm. Of course there's this mind-body connection. And so because of that, any sort of movement, any sort of just conscious awareness of how you're treating your body is going to have a huge impact on, yes, your health benefits, your physical health benefits, also on your mind, your mental benefits. And so I want to also talk a little bit about like mindful practices in particular, because I think yoga, like, yes, any sort of movement is good, but in particular yoga, there's such an emphasis on mindful movement. Mm. Even in your hot yoga class, I'm sure the teacher talked about the breath or talked about being aware of what's going on in your body, feeling how you're taking up space in the room, that kind of mindful movement, like putting your mind and being really intentional about how you move is even more impactful. There's a lot of studies showing that that mindful movement, when your mind is kind of moving alongside your body, it helps to improve it even more. So example, like they say that people working out, even doing strength training, if you're really present when you're doing strength training, it actually has a stronger impact to build muscles than if you're really distracted, like thinking about something else as you do strength training. And so just by being mindful, yoga has such a huge impact that way. Also, the way that we use breath in yoga, so slowing down the breath, being very conscious and aware of your breath, it stimulates the vagus nerve. So it activates the parasympathetic nervous system. Tons of science around how breath impacts your mind. You know, they just say even 5 minutes of slow breathing a day can decrease anxiety levels, can sharpen your focus. So many powerful impacts when you really slow things down and you're able to let your mind be present and aware with your movements.
Yeah, I love that so much. I guess that's why yoga is often described as a union of the body, the mind, and the spirit. You know, for our very first episode, we had a TCM practitioner on, And one of the things that we talked about, how Western medicine is different from more Eastern medicine, is that Eastern medicine doesn't separate the body and the mind, but it's just one holistic aspect of humanity, right? And that's so beautiful because I feel like here in America, especially, I feel like we like to divide our systems into like actual its own compartments. But in reality, it's a union of it all, right? Like the movements, the poses, and the breath work, and also the mindfulness. You know, I'm so sad that this podcast is only audio, so our viewers can't see any movements. But do you have a favorite pose and why? And I guess also a least favorite pose and why?
My gosh, I do have a favorite. Okay. I do have a favorite. I love triangle pose. It's a pose where your legs are spread wide, you're standing, you're kind of leaning over to one side, your arms are open and expanding, and really your body is moving in all directions at once. And I really love this pose. I mean, it does feel great in my body personally, mm-hmm. but I think what I love the most is that there's this idea of expansion in all directions. There's this idea that there's this growth and this space. It makes me feel like I'm not separate, you and I. You know, you were just talking about this union of body and mind. When you feel so expansive like that, it feels like, yeah, I'm one of everyone here. I'm one of everyone in this room, of every being in this world. I'm one with my mind and my body. I am the universe, if mm-hmm. you will. And so I do really love triangle pose for that reason. I don't know about least favorite poses. I mean, there are definitely poses that are more difficult for mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just leave it at that. Okay. I'll just leave it at that.
We'll take the answer. You know, yoga, I guess when I see it now, I feel like there's a yoga class everywhere, and it's definitely, you know, exploded in popularity, especially here in the West, right? I'm curious, do you think yoga is becoming too commercialized, or do you think it's a good thing that it's helping more people discover it?
I know that this can be a hot topic. Mm-hmm. I personally think that it is good. I personally think that it's exploding in popularity because people are seeing and feeling the benefits. And like I said towards the beginning of this podcast, however someone finds yoga is perfect. You know, wherever they begin their yoga journey is perfect. You know, I believe in people and I believe in teachers, that they have people's best intentions when they're teaching. I personally don't take it for granted being a teacher, and I know that it comes with a lot of responsibility. And I do, for the most part, believe in other yoga teachers to hold that responsibility sacred as well. And so, again, even if someone is just slightly brought in, maybe it's a sweaty hot yoga class or, you know, it's a hip hop music class, you know, whatever it may be, goat yoga, all these different variations of yoga. I mean, even for you, right? You took the class, and even though you're like, dang, this hot yoga stuff is no joke, it inspired you to invite me to be here. It inspired you to invite other modalities outside of Western medicine to come speak on your podcast. And again, that was your entryway in, and I think it's beautiful. I think that people have to be met where they are, and from there, they can start to deepen their understanding of the practice. And that is the responsibility of a teacher, to help guide people to that practice. And it may not be immediately. You don't have to start meditating on day two. You don't have to believe in multiple lifetimes or energetic channels. You don't have to believe any of that on day two. You just have to get a little bit of a spark. And then from there, you can learn and really start to see the benefits of this practice.
Yeah. You know, we've been talking a lot about, I guess, the partitions between more Western medicine and, I guess, more Eastern practices. For yoga itself, how do you think it complements or maybe even challenge modern medicine or even fitness routines in general?
Yeah. I mean, even just where it comes from is testament to that, right? It mm-hmm. is a practice that has been around, we think, for thousands of years, and it has withheld the test of time. So I think from that perspective, it is so powerful in that way. I think it's a great complement to modern medicine, to fitness routines. You kind of need yoga and more mindful practices to become more aware and more connected with yourself. But you also need modern medicine in emergencies. You know, yoga and Ayurveda, it is very much a preventative practice. Mm-hmm. So it is so important for that. But also you need more acute medicine like Western medicine as well. Even modern fitness routines, mm-hmm. you know, we do live in a fast-paced world at this time. Modern fitness routines are generally designed for the fast-paced world. It's designed for quick results. Mm-hmm. It's good to have a little bit of balance of both.
Yeah, I love that. You know, it's great learning about yoga today beyond just the history and the philosophy and, you know, your favorite pose and whatnot. And also, I guess, how we can adapt this super ancient practice into a more modern world. I'm curious, if someone is, let's say, curious about the world of yoga, or maybe kind of hesitant to start, or maybe like me, scared to take another class, if you could give them a message of what has yoga taught you about life that you wish everyone else could experience?
I would say, from kind of a very basic level, don't be afraid, don't be scared. There's so many ways to just get a little taste of yoga, especially now. I mean, there's so many yoga for beginners YouTube videos. You can do a 5-minute class. It doesn't have to be for a long time. There's so many ways just to get a little taste of it, just a little bit, just so you can start to sense the benefits and start to incorporate it into your life. I think that's like the very beginning. Me, maybe a little bit farther down the path, but certainly not at the end. For me, it has just taught me that there is so much more to life than, you know, being jerked around by emotions and things that are happening at the surface level. You know, the stresses of jobs, of friendships, even relationships that can be stressful. But with yoga, you can learn practices that truly help you handle all of those ups and downs of life. Again, before I did yoga, I was always just, you know, you just feel like chained or shackled to life and all the ups and downs of your emotions and what's going on in the world. But with yoga, you can really learn these ancient practices that help you to deal with those in a really beautiful, healthy, and just calm way. And so for me, it's been life-changing. And I hope you try even just a little bit somewhere, do some yoga classes online, and then go to a studio and meet other people, because truly we are better when we do things together.
What if your routine felt less like a chore and more like a ritual? Rooted in Japan since 1946, Uka Beauty creates everyday practices that remind us beauty isn't just how you look, but how you feel. At the heart of their mission is regenerative beauty, from ingredients that restore biodiversity to refillable, circular packaging that reduces waste. Their iconic Scalp Kanzen Brush transforms scalp care into full body relief, easing headaches, boosting circulation, and releasing jaw tension. And with innovative shampoos, nail oils, and serums, Uka restores balance and vitality with timeless Japanese sensibility and craftsmanship. Join the mission of turning care into impact. In collaboration with Rom Spa, you can get 15% off your first order at ukabeauty.com. That's ukabeauty.com with the code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. One-time use only and cannot be combined with other codes. Imagine if skincare could do more, but with less. Meet Remsen, a New York brand made in South Korea, where world-leading innovation meets the no-nonsense energy of New York City. Their essential duo keeps it effective and efficient with high-quality ingredients. Their Gentle Greens Cleanser, featuring green tea, centella, and aloe, cleanses without drying. And the multitasking peptide moisturizer combines bakuchiol, ceramides, and a clinically proven dose of peptides in a single lightweight step to hydrate, strengthen the skin barrier, and help prevent visible signs of aging. Both are safe for sensitive and acne-prone skin types, vegan, cruelty-free, and beautifully packaged with sustainable materials, making the set a great gift. You can get 20% off your first purchase on remsenskincare.com. That's remsenskincare.com with the code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. One-time use and cannot be combined with other codes. Get maximal results with minimal steps.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Friends of Franz podcast. And today, I'm proud to introduce to you another topic that I don't think I've ever talked about before on our podcast. And I think, actually, the very first time that I heard about this practice is from the very person that we're going to talk to today. So I'm so honored. We're going to talk about Reiki. Does anyone know what that means? Well, we'll learn all about it today. Margaret, thank you so much for joining me today.
I am thrilled. Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
Reiki is something, like I said, I think the very first time that I heard about it was from you during that NAP event, probably, was it a year or two ago? Time flies.
Yeah, had to have been around there.
Yeah, well, I'm sure most of my audience maybe not know what it is at all. Before we get to, I guess, the tenets of Reiki, can you tell us more about your story and how you discovered it?
Sure. Yeah. And I think with Reiki quickly gaining popularity, I think our listeners today may well have heard of it, like you mentioned, or read about it in some capacity. For me, my introduction was similar. Prior to it in my life, I hadn't really known much about it. I heard the terminology thrown around, but I was going through a period in my life where I was experiencing a lot of stressors from every which way, at work, socially, romantically. And it got to a point where the stress, I guess you could say, was manifesting itself physically at that point. And I was going from doctor to doctor, not understanding what was happening and growing more and more frustrated by the day. And what was even more frustrating was the fact that every doctor ended up saying to me at one point or another, you know, maybe do you ever think that this is just your stress level? And I was like, what are they talking about? Like, how could all of this, you know, like bad skin breakouts, mystery rashes, things like that, that are just really perturbing, how could this all just be from stress? And in addition to that, no one was giving me any advice on how to tackle it. They were just simply telling me, maybe you're fine. Maybe you're just a very stressed out person. Okay, that didn't help me at all. So someone had suggested going to meditation because I had tried therapy also in past years. They mentioned, well, maybe you just need to lower your cortisol levels. Go to meditation, see how that works out for you. And I did. And that was a great suggestion. I was really into it for the 10, 15 minutes that I got to sneak away to a meditation session. I felt it helped. You know, I was able to leave my hectic environment and find a place within me, I guess, also that was giving me a little bit of solace. And slowly through that, from that point on, I was meeting more and more people from that community and eventually introduced me to things like sound baths and acupuncture and cupping and herbal medicine and eventually Reiki. One of my meditation practitioners was also a Reiki practitioner. And after telling her the story, like I told you, with some more details, she really encouraged me to research Reiki and attend a session. And from the moment that I attended my first Reiki session, understood what it was and felt benefits of it, I kind of immediately was drawn to it and knew that it was something I wanted to dive deeper into. And I knew because Reiki, and I'm sure we'll get into this later on in the conversation, and you are able to self-heal with Reiki, that was huge for me. And so I wanted the ability not only to research this therapy more, and not only to share it with those around me by becoming a practitioner, but also to have this as a tool in my pocket for myself going forward whenever and wherever I would need it.
Yeah, I love that so much. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, I kind of really understand and agree with what you said earlier on with, you know, finding different modalities, I guess, within our healthcare system as well. And I was telling this to our other guest this season that the American Western healthcare system can be a little bit ethnocentric, right? Like we think we're always the right one. But for the most part, I guess for many people, our treatment modalities here are kind of a bandage to a deeper solution, right? It's not really getting to the root cause
right,
of whatever they're feeling and whatever they're going through. And so I love your story of discovering Reiki. And I guess at this point, our audience is like, some of them are like, what the heck are they talking about? Let's get into it. What is Reiki? What is its history? What is this all about?
So very simply put, I would say Reiki is simply the practice of channeling healing life force energy through the practitioner and into the recipient. So it is not a manipulation of energy. It is not a wielding of energy. It is very simply the allowance of healing energy to be channeled through one vessel, which would be the practitioner, and guided into another, the recipient. So another main focus of Reiki healing is the usage of hands as a channel or guide for this healing energy, because it is said that our hands are natural outlets and receptacles of energy, and oftentimes the most potent point of energy in our bodies. So Reiki is a healing practice where the actual healing is delivered through a traditionally hands-on method with the practitioners, or it could be a hands-off method, non-contact, with the practitioner's hands hovering over certain areas of the body close enough but not touching, so close enough so that energy can still be transferred.
Yeah, I think that's a great introduction as well to our audience who may not know even what it's all about, right? And I just love the even just the concept and the practice of really harnessing from within ourselves healing properties, because I believe that our bodies are much more powerful than we think, right? You know, Reiki literally means universal life energy. And I feel like our whole world is just energy in itself. But I guess, how would you explain that concept to someone completely new? Regarding this concept of energy, what would you say is the central premise behind Reiki?
So I would start by saying that any living organism on this planet or beyond has a frequency that they emit, a frequency they're vibrating at. This is life force energy. We all have some sort of an electric charge as living organisms. And I'll state outright that I am by no means a medical professional like you are. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a professor. I never pretend to be. So anything that I comfortably speak to is what I've learned as a student of Reiki, as a Reiki practitioner, or just a student in general, and from what I've read and observed. And so I would describe the central premise of Reiki as having a goal to restore and bolster our bodies and our mind's natural ability to heal and regulate ourselves physically, emotionally, and spiritually. The goal of receiving Reiki life force energy is to elevate our life force so that our bodies are functioning in an optimal state in order to allow our bodies to organically and successfully prevent disease and discomfort and fight against it naturally to sustain our vigor.
What would you say are the core principles of Reiki?
I would say the core principle and a key component is really helping the body and the mind remember again that our bodies innately know what it needs and it can naturally optimized so that we're combating potential unease or disease. And we can do it holistically, but there are times where we may be very low on our spiritual or emotional energy, and that certainly translates into our capacity to physically recover. And so during those times, if we're spiritual or emotionally at an all-time low, we certainly would need Reiki therapy to help us receive the healing energy that we need and allow it to move freely throughout our bodies to bolster that. And I think, I mean, it sounds cliche, but I think we should always remember that we just can't underestimate the power that our emotional states have over our physical states. So it's crucial that these elements within us are well balanced so that we can operate in an optimal state for the long term.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think within the topic of balance and our emotional state, I think within also the context of practices, I guess people's first thoughts would be something like yoga and meditation, or even for some like Qigong or Tai Chi, right? How would you say Reiki differs from those other practices?
Yeah, no, I can certainly see how and why people would associate Reiki with yoga and Qigong, because it all revolves around how we maintain and apply energy within our bodies and in our lives. I'd say the main differentiator here is that Reiki at its core has a focus on healing and restoring, whereas yoga and Qigong, and again, I'm not an expert on the latter two by any means, but I suppose I would describe the latter two more as tools and practices to work towards discipline of our bodies and our minds rather than healing. Although, of course, having disciplined bodies and minds will no doubt be healing in its own way. So as an example, I think with yoga, you're disciplining your body in the sense that you are consistently working on your breath in order to allow your body to achieve certain positions, harnessing awareness of certain body parts and muscles to sustain those poses in maybe even in environments with high stressors. With Qigong, you're likely to work on cultivating your existing energy levels and encouraging that existing energy within you to flow more freely throughout your body, kind of in a way that might be complementary to physical therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so Reiki seems to me of those practices much more focused on healing and addressing how to regulate your emotional and spiritual states in tandem with your physical health.
Yeah, this is such a great differentiation. Thank you. And I guess one question I've always had in mind since I started thinking of, you know, talking about Reiki and our podcast is, I'm so curious, what do you think is a common misconception about it that you wish you could clear up once and for all?
Yeah, that's definitely a great question. I come across this a lot in conversation. And I think it's very fair for people to have skepticism and want to have some healthy discourse over it because there's kind of mystery around it. So I would say at top of mind, there are two things I would address or express. A, I personally believe as a Reiki practitioner that Reiki and any other alternative holistic practice alone should never be a replacement for all the leaps and advancements of Western medicine and science. It is without a doubt that we have highly sophisticated findings and treatments and drugs in the science and medical field, and we cannot dismiss that. So I personally believe that Reiki and other holistic healing therapies, and there's so many that I love, they're most powerful when they are incorporated as a complement to modern day science. I feel like it's a no-brainer that we should take preventative approaches to our health to understand our minds and bodies holistically, understand the root cause of disease. But when we need to, we must also incorporate modern day science and technology to successfully treat and eradicate very severe symptoms and illnesses. The second that I would want to bring up is the fact that I've had some conversations where people are talking to me about Reiki almost as if it were witchcraft, which is ludicrous. I would love to drill in the fact that Reiki is not something that someone is doing to you. Again, like I sort of mentioned earlier, very simply put, the practice of one, the practitioner allowing themselves to be the vehicle through which healing life force energy can travel through to reach the recipient. So the practitioner is not wielding any magical powers. The basis of Reiki is to allow healing energy, which is thought to be self-guiding, to flow where it needs to flow. And I guess I would say just, you know, as any body of water shall flow where it needs to flow.
Yeah, I love that so much. And I feel like it also kind of holds the essence of even scientific principles that we know of. Like, let's say like, energy usually goes from high sources to low sources, right? To fill that gap up. And also, I love your point regarding, you know, the complementary and symbiotic relationship between, I guess, more scientific technology that we have now and the advances that we have alongside the, I guess, more traditional alternative therapies that we have, right? Even things like practices from thousands and thousands of years. In that regard, I wanted to ask, when it comes to the health benefits, what are the health benefits of Reiki that we know of? I guess even outside of just the, I guess, mental well-being and I guess the sense of peace that you mentioned.
There are many, many health benefits of Reiki. I feel like I can't even articulate it in one sentence, but there are actually, if you or any of our listeners have time to browse the National Library of Medicine, there are actually quite a few different studies published on how Reiki has successfully treated long-term pain, anxiety, depression, has provided clarity and focus, even for those who might be considered neurodivergent. It seems the point in time where individuals arrive at wanting to explore alternative therapies such as Reiki is when they've reached their absolute limit with frustration or desperation, when their current state or their current prescribed medications are not aligned with them physically or simply have very serious and harmful side effects. And so this could be an assortment of ailments, but it seems that when people are really desperate to understand what's going on with their bodies and they're going through bouts of intense stress, intense physical and emotional pain, they're very desperate for a soft place to land that is not a cold, sterile environment such as a hospital or a doctor's office. Maybe they're tired of years-long prescription of drugs and needles, and they're just looking for a gentle environment, a gentle treatment, which is certainly what Reiki is. Reiki is as gentle and as soft as it comes with exceptionally low risk. So I think that is the point in time where people say, okay, let me explore. Maybe they are just physically and mentally run ragged over their current prescriptions and cocktails of prescription drugs. So I think that because Reiki addresses both physical and emotional stress of your current state, that really allows the patient to be able to surrender to the reality of the situation. And if you have so much stored stress and fear and loss of hope, your body's not going to be susceptible to any types of therapy or medication. Mm-hmm. Your body may continue to reject that because it's just in such a stressful and hard environment. So Reiki, first and foremost, will allow your body to feel safe again, to feel safe to receive whatever it needs to receive. So even knowing that you are in a safe and soft and gentle environment, that can quickly move you towards recovery more so than people realize.
I think it also goes to show that we're all so different, right? And and I guess healing is not a one-size-fits-all across the whole population, across the whole world. Like, this modality may work for some, this other modality may not work for others. And it's just a beautiful thing to think about that we have so many ways of even trying to find that sense of recovery and sense of peace. And I guess my next question would be, for someone who is so interested when it comes to Reiki, I'm curious, how does a session look like? What can someone expect if that they never tried it before? And I'm curious, can it be self-practice, or does it always require a practitioner?
Yeah, no, I love to talk about all of those. And I think that because there's some mystery around it, I could understand why someone would have hesitation before going into it. But it actually really is so simple. It can certainly vary by practitioner. It can vary by the recipient's or the patient's request. Usually I label it recipients because we're not in like a doctor-patient setting. And it can vary depending on the scope of healing that the recipient desires or expects. To start with, Reiki therapy can absolutely take place anywhere, anytime. I think for optimal results, it's always healthy for the practitioner to ensure that they can identify an environment that is safe, quiet, clean, and comfortable for both practitioner and recipient. Typically, you can expect a room to look maybe similar to a massage room where you have a massage bed or a treatment bed. It could maybe even be a yoga mat if necessary, so long as it's very comfortable for all parties involved. And like I mentioned earlier, it's because it's so gentle with such low risk, recipients can be welcomed into the space and expect simply to be in a state of surrender, I would say, in order to allow them to fully receive the healing energies that will be channeled into them in that session. The practitioner may start even prior to meeting the recipient. The practitioner may start by immersing themselves in a meditative state to clear and kind of neutralize their own aura and, most importantly, ground the energy in the healing space. And this is important because as recipients are welcomed into a space, you don't want to overwhelm them with any other emotions from any other entities. Mm-hmm. And upon arrival, there may be a quick exchange of what the recipient is going through in the current moment. And maybe the practitioner can relay what Reiki is and how it can apply to their circumstance. And then I would say a quick scanning of the body can take place where the practitioner is kind of hovering over the recipient and allowing the energy of the recipient to guide the practitioner to which areas may need to be focused on, may need to have the energies channeled more potently into that area. And so that's the gist of it. And the duration can be whatever is agreed upon, or maybe depending on specific areas and needs of the recipient. And I would say, yes, it absolutely can be a self-practice. I would say in my own circumstance, like I talked about a little bit earlier, I feel self-healing is such a tremendous tool in all areas of life. And so that is definitely one of the main reasons I was so drawn to Reiki, for the ability to self-heal when needed.
Yeah, I love that so much. And, you know, I've learned so much today about Reiki. And I think it's also great hearing from your experience, right? And it kind of opens my eyes again to the world we have outside of us, and also the world within us, that our bodies are so complex, so interesting. Yes. And it's like, it holds so much ultimate power. And as my last question, Margaret, you know, What do you think Reiki has taught you about life that you wish everyone else could experience?
I would say, yeah, so like with all questions, I feel like there's so many thoughts and so hard for me to articulate a few words. I would say it's just given me such a different perspective on how to navigate myself in the world, how I behave, how I respond, how I can self-heal. So maybe the gift of self-healing is probably the most valuable to me. I feel that every time I return to Reiki, I'm instantly grounded. I instantly soften up. I instantly feel more malleable so that I can be flexible in my approach to dealing with harsh or difficult environments. And one thing, I mean, there's so much to touch upon with the Reiki practice and its history and all of that. But one thing, and this is probably going to sound so cliche, but it is true. Love is a basis of Reiki, that this healing life force energy can also be described as pure love. And so anytime I receive Reiki treatments for myself, whether it's self-practice or whether I choose to go with another practitioner, what I always feel at the end of every session is like an injection of love and softness. And I think that is how we are all supposed to feel once we have regulated ourselves or learned how to regulate ourselves and are grounded. And that then gives me clarity to tackle whatever annoyances have showed up in my day. So I think the gift of self-love, of grounding, of clarity, and self-healing, those are all things that I think everyone should be able to be gifted.
That's so beautiful. Margaret, thank you so much for joining us today to talk more about Reiki, your experience, the premise of the whole practice, and just showing us that we have the capacity to, I guess, heal and it all roots in love. Oh, Margaret, thank you so much.
It was my absolute pleasure. I loved this. Thank you.